morning. Thursday, August 18, 2016, 9 a.m., County Administration Workshop. This is the County Board of Commissioners. We're all present. And the first item on the agenda is the donation of surplus property for, this is emergency services, and then an update on shakeout disaster. We have Jenny Hall. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello. We have an old Suburban that belongs to emergency management, and my ask is that we would be allowed to donate it to Rogue Community College's vehicle program so it could be used as a learning tool for the students there in their shop. And I did speak to RCC, and it is an item that they would be very interested in. The item was initially purchased in 2004 with Homeland Security dollars. It is owned by the county, but, you know, emergency management.
That's an important distinction because a lot of departments think that the cars are theirs and they're actually fleet. They just kind of have them. They pay for them, but they're actually administered by the fleet. This one's different, so
yeah. Yes. It is different, but I've had quite a bit of conversation with Robert Keith, who's also talked to Robert Brandis, just to make sure that everyone was on that same page, that RCC would be a good place for it to go. We verified that no county money has been used for any upkeep or anything to do with this vehicle. Any work that was done was either paid out of search and rescue or from Friends of SAR for its upkeep. And so both of the Robert Keith and Robert Brandis were completely comfortable donating it as opposed to selling it in surplus and keeping the money because we didn't feel that there was anything that would need to be reimbursed per se, and it seemed like a good use of the vehicle.
Okay. And I think the other important aspect is car isn't worth much.
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry. It's worth probably less than $2,000. It needs quite a bit of work on it as well.
Well, that sounds wrong. It's not a vehicle that can be used, because there are some very fine 1998 vehicles.
Sure.
But this is not one of them.
It is not.
Okay.
And Search and Rescue, who was using the vehicle, it actually brought to my attention that it was in such shape that they weren't able to use it anymore, and it needed enough work that they weren't going to spend the money to repair it.
Okay. They were going to have to be searched and rescued if they used it in the wilderness?
They were trying to mitigate that.
That was my only question. Because
we'd probably find him and die somewhere, and we know exactly where. We would have to go rescue him.
So, really, just my question to you is if that is an okay for me to do.
Yeah, and the board?
Yeah, I have no problem with that.
No problem with that.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll just put that on the consent calendar.
Okay.
That's it. Okay. Next item, update on shakeout disaster exercise.
The annual drop, cover, and hold drill is scheduled for October 10 at 10. Some of you remember we actually dropped and covered and held under this conference table last year. And what I'm asking...
It would be notable that there was one commissioner who was kicked out from under the table because we did not want him there.
He what?
What? You remember?
And I have pictures of it.
Yeah. Right.
It just occurred to me, October 10th at 9 a.m. is the Sunny Valley Sand and Gravel hearing. So we will be shake, rattle, and roll the Basker building. So we may not be participating.
Sure.
But... We absolutely support the plan.
Okay. And I would like to
I don't see where we would change our mind from last year.
No. But just to reaffirm, I guess, our commitment and for me to be able to approach other department heads to ask if they are interested in participating. And if they are, then I can assist them if they need any help.
Okay, board. Can she go ahead and do that?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank
you're fine,
you.
Jenny.
Being prepared for the
sorry about that. We scheduled another event.
That might come on October 6th.
Okay. HR, we have Mr. Schofield.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
What I have for you today is a request from Public Health. Currently, they have three ACO positions, all of which report to Diane. And what she would like to do is have one of the ACO's position changed to be a lead ACO. what that will do is it will make her operation of animal control be more efficient, where she doesn't have to take her time assigning daily duties. She can have a lead person doing that. The person will not have full supervisory authority in the sense that they can't hire and fire, they can't discipline. They're still within the bargaining unit. They're just a lead officer. This is something that was in place in the past when that position used to be overseeing the shelter. Now they have a shelter coordinator. So it's something she'd like to put back in place. It's fairly nominal cost to do it. And so it's something she'd like to make her operation more efficient, lessen her current span of control of how many employees she has directly reporting to her.
This doesn't affect the position that we have in regards to a supervisor out there that does the animal shelter stuff.
No.
This is just the ACO work.
This is just the ACOs. You have three ACOs. All three of them report to Diane.
Yeah.
It makes better operational sense and structure to have one of them report directly to her as a lead, and then the other two report to the lead.
Okay.
So we're in animal control officers.
Mm-hmm.
I know there was something in the air somewhere because I inhaled it someplace that they were being moved to the sheriff's department.
That was something that was contemplated. Ultimately, it made more sense to leave them within animal control but work in conjunction with the sheriff's department to have better training as it relates to their use of weapons. So they're still under public health. However, they're going to be training and working with the sheriff's department on their firearms, and they've adopted the sheriff's department policy on firearms use.
Sounds the best of a hybrid situation.
Yeah.
Well, it might sound the best of a hybrid situation until we get into the situation where who is speaking and who is listening. If they are my responsibility,
mm-hmm.
Sheriff, what control do I have over what they're doing or not doing? And because they're working for public health officer,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I just see a inborn.
Well,
we had, pardon if you don't mind, we had a meeting here with the sheriff and public health, and who else was there? Some other person's sheriff, and then HR and myself, and we vetted all of this kind of stuff, and that's why the sheriff wanted them to adopt the firearms policy and then go and do the firearms training with the sheriff's department so that he would know their level of competence and be able to certify that they're competent. And he doesn't really care about the other animal control stuff, and he doesn't want the other animal control stuff.
The shelter.
Yeah, and you know, picking up stray animals and that kind of thing.
To kind of answer your question in another way is, animal control is a tricky hybrid position no matter where it is. In the state, about half of the agencies are under the local sheriff department. About half of them are under public health, and then there's a few that are just autonomous entities. And the reason that it's so split is in the ORS, there's different things that animal control is responsible for. So they have C's and site responsibility, and they're sworn officers. That's sheriff responsibility. He's liable. Well, anytime there's infection control or bites, the responsible person is the public health authority. That's a public health issue. So that no matter where you put them, they have duality in their responsibility when it comes to the ORS and how it works. So if you put in the sheriff's department, well, then the public health department is like, well, I'm ultimately responsible if there's an animal bite, which is the primary duty of animal control is responding to those, and I have no oversight. But flip it, you put them under public health, and the sheriff has the same complaint. So what they're doing is they're working in conjunction with the two departments a little closer than they used to. They're having the sheriff have a little better oversight when it comes to training and firearms usage, so that it doesn't, you know, he doesn't have as much oversight as his staff, but he has more than he used to, and he's happy with that arrangement.
Yeah, he was just concerned about the firearms, and so that was what we worked out that day, so the training and his supervision would take precedent over that portion.
And whose responsibility is it if the animal control officer uses a weapon unwisely?
I mean, ultimately, no matter who's responsible, the county gets sued, whether it's the sheriff.
No matter which department.
Or, I mean, ultimately, he is he is the one who swears them in. They are sworn officers. And so the sheriff has liability for any animal control period. Conversely, if they handle an infection control or animal bite issue improperly, Public Health Authority, Diane Hoover, is ultimately responsible. I mean, either way, the county gets sued.
Ultimately, we're responsible. And frankly, this is the best coordinated effort we've seen between animal control and the sheriff's office in a long, long time. And I really appreciate the fact that the sheriff is reviewing oversight of his core competency, which is the firearm training. He's done an incredible job, I think, in training in general, making sure that everybody's certified. And I have confidence that, you know, now that it's under somebody's core thing for that, and Diane's doing, you know, her public health role, which she takes very seriously to the letter of the law for the bat and rabies situation and animal control, it really feels like the animal control officer is the best served by having both of these people who know equally their own profession. They're getting the best we possibly could do. I feel badly for those departments that are siloed within the state, and it's just animal control in and of itself. Maybe if they have a substantial district where they've got training and stuff, I don't know. But this way, they have kind of like two parents, as opposed to just being out there on their own or not being supported the way they frankly have been in the past. I remember when we had a gentleman who was like the one control animal officer. He was between kind of a rock and a hard spot where he didn't have a home anywhere, really.
Mm-hmm.
He was on his own, and this is before you guys were here. But the sheriff's office didn't want him. Public health really didn't want, it didn't fit there. Yeah. They didn't understand that connection for the infection control. So it was, I mean, that came to a head when we had the rabies situation. We had 9 cases of rabies, like, in 1 year here. Made statewide news and stuff. But that's all come together, I think, really, really well. So, making progress.
And then they were both here, and that's what we worked out, because Diane, she says, I don't know anything about compliance with the firearms. It's made her very nervous. But she says, I know they need to be very engaged because 90% of what they do is animal control and bites, you know, the bites and the attacks of dogs mostly. And so they sat here and talked about how they could work that out, and the sheriff will do all the firearms, and then the public health department has adopted the sheriff's firearms.
Well, people might even ask, why do animal control officers need firearms in the first place? There was a situation a month ago.
Just a month ago.
Where, you know, that just erases everybody, mine included, like, really, do they actually need... Mm-hmm. No, that dog was coming after that person, and had they not had that...
Did you see his
firearm?
Gun the first time the dog attacked him?
No.
Did the pulled strap it up like this, and the dog got the stock and pulled the bolt right out of the stock and the strap.
Just, there's no debating in my mind that there's, you know, there's one instance. There you go.
Yeah, and not only do they have 22s now, but they have a shotgun for situations like that, because had he not been a really good shot...
Yeah, would have worked.
No, you had to be a really good shot to get that dog.
Yeah.
A shotgun, it wouldn't have mattered that much.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good hybrid situation that I think will serve the ACOs and make their job safer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we have to keep them safe. They have to have those out there. They're going into some pretty, you know, some people unfortunately teach those dogs to be mean, and then they're out running loose.
So
they need to have those. Okay.
Well, yeah, and with the increased more aggressive dog breeds that are out there, with the growing of the industry that requires those folks for protection of their product, this is, to think I'm sending somebody to live with a 22, you're going to protect yourself and others, you need something a little bit bigger bore.
Yeah. The reality is when you're put in a stressful situation, your ability to do the right thing in the right way is challenging at best, and being accurate with a 22 is sometimes hindered due to the adrenaline and the stress. Shotgun's point and shoot. You don't have to be a good shot to be efficient with that weapon. So in those pressure situations, it's a better, safer option. It also has far less range, so the likelihood of collateral damage is drastically reduced.
Mm-hmm. So. It is. Okay, we can move this forward. $300 a month, so we probably need to put this on our... is that within her budget?
Yeah, it is. It's a fairly nominal.
It's pretty nominal, yeah. I just want to make sure. I know I talked to her about it, and I couldn't remember if we had made any adjustment on that. So
It is a budgetary change.
It is.
It's a job description.
Well, it's a job description.
But
so it's admin.
Fairly nominal cost-wise.
Yeah. Admin.
Admin?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's position change.
We can speak to it, JJ.
Yeah, you don't need to go. You don't need to come in, JJ. I can speak to it.
I think there's a benefit to having Diane freed up from this oversight administrative as well. In excess of $300, she's costing the county a lot more than that. You know, she spends just a few hours on this issue, or is saved a few hours from not having to be as intimately involved.
Mm-hmm.
That's worth its weight.
Well, yeah, anytime you've got you're responsible for three people directly, that just becomes a real troublemaker situation, because you cannot do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay, I see a benefit of one person being contacted, the other two as well. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Operationally, it'll make more sense. Yeah. All right.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Peggy. You have a busy day today, don't you?
Yep.
Employee fair. Okay, quarterly update. Parks. Do we have our parks person today? Or
here he is.
Are you in charge of parks today?
Mr. Jungle Jim.
Okay. It might be faster than she expected, so let's just go on to finance. And
okay, we'll do finance.
Or business, and if she shows, that's great.
I'm more than happy to.
I'm sure she's busy.
Yeah.
No, not in the summer.
Middle of
the fair. She's probably got a full house.
Well, all I have is just kind of updates on projects I'm working with. You folks have given me plenty of direction.
Do we keep telling you what to do and where to go?
Keep telling you.
And how to get there?
So this is just a quick update, I think, on several items. First, Chris Carlson, as you know, has been off for the last couple months, so she's scheduled to be back in the office next week. Starting next Wednesday.
Are we going to have a playpen in the office?
No. Baby's not invited, just for occasional visits, but it's not to stay. The time clock.
Is that Governor? On call. Thanks for visiting, but please don't
but,
stay.
come back. Yeah. Don't live here.
Funny stories, huh?
Time clocks. We're moving right along, working with folks. For the most part, you know, some people are loving it. Some people are reluctantly working with it, and so that's the way it is.
So, but on that, the one situation where there's this not just reluctance and slower. Are they under the reality that this is what they're going to have to work with?
There's been a couple of meetings.
I think it's moving that direction.
Okay.
I said it's not that there's just an adamant never will. It's just I think there's he's just feeling like another item on his plate that's overwhelming at this point. So
I know that I've talked to a couple of managers, and it is challenging. It's more challenging than I expected it to be.
Mm-hmm.
More cumbersome, and it's just like all these counties. None of them are created the same. Not all these departments are the same.
Right.
You know,
right.
You've
correct.
Got facilities where custodians are coming in after hours. They don't necessarily have. They go kind of to the place for cleaning, and they don't have a
this morning,
workshop. And
this morning, I was working with Douglas. It was like, where's the clock in the courthouse? Well, we have one up in the DA, and that's it. We don't have a clock in a general location. So he had, because he had to be here early to get something done at the courthouse, so he's looking for where can I clock in? So, I mean, now in his situation, so he probably should have a smartphone app.
Yeah.
You know, that way, if no matter where you begin your day, you can log in.
We're not doing that. We're not doing smartphones for our custodians or something. And I think they check in.
Typically,
but they come here directly.
Right. Yeah, right.
Would it be possible for us to have a time clock here?
Right.
In a general sense. Area that's,
central. See, we're buying a couple more clocks for example, for corrections. They were working with the computers and the apps, but they're finding that the clock is going to be more efficient, which it is. I mean, when the clock's there, you've got either proximity card or you just hit the buttons and you're 5-10 seconds and you're clocked in. It's pretty straightforward, pretty easy. For those folks who are computer, you know, you get to your desk and you turn on your computer first thing. It's just simple, straightforward for that. I think there's some realization for 95% of the people, it's clock in, clock out, you're done. For the timekeepers and even the managers, there's a realization that sometimes you have to go in and do beyond just, you know, people don't show up at 8 and leave at 5. They've got other things happening, coming in early, you know, taking a late lunch, whatever the situation is.
Ryan's is really challenging because his staff is coming and going all week long, 24/7. He's telling me about a 2 o'clock response to a fire alarm or something like that. These are the things that I don't realize we didn't when we set out. We experienced a very 8 to 5-ish type
correct
schedule.
Ryan's
people are on call.
Well, that's where I'm assuming that the app on the cell phone, why would that not work?
It could, or you just go in and correct it the next day. I mean, you just go in and input it the next day. It's not.
But then he's having to.
It's a new system, and it's,
well,
you have to learn how to. It's not very difficult. I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't have the same challenges. I'm just saying that, you know, if you talk to
the system.
It's different, and
it's different, it's new.
In every situation, you have to figure out how to do it. Once you figure out how, you're on the way to go.
Exactly, you know? Right. Exactly, so. Right.
Well, it still has to, I mean, after you figure it out, and it's like, okay, now I know what I'm doing. It's still taking me an extra hour or whatever. You know, it's like, wait a second. This is supposed to be more efficient. So
it
constantly
is.
Constantly refining that system to say, you know, like a hybrid situation of, unless you keep track of those couple of hours when you're coming in, and we'll input those at the end of the week or something like that. If Ryan's having to do this every day, I mean, at some point you say, this is working or it isn't for some of these weird departments. And we do a hybrid situation where, you know, maybe they are doing a little bit on paper because Doug doesn't have a smartphone. Neither do you, Arthur, you know, and you don't want a smartphone. Okay, well, we're going to have to work with that, figure out how do we...
I have one. I'll give you, as smart as I am. Can't figure it out.
Well, I think, like we've said so many times, you know, it's a transition, and there's a little bit of rough water whenever you transition to a new system. I would say that no, we're not in a situation where things are so difficult that we need to use a different way. I mean, there's always adapting and working with.
He had a point of saying that why wouldn't any time, this is something he raised, and it made sense to me. He said any time that an employee is doing something outside of what their normal, why doesn't it just default to overtime or something like that?
It does default to overtime.
He said in his, maybe he just needs help with it, but he's, I thought he asked for help and it didn't. So we don't do that. You just have to click that it's overtime or something like that.
No, it's overtime is paid out. And unfortunately, one of the issues with this specific system is that if you, we put in all the rules. So if you qualify for overtime, it puts you into overtime and it pays out as overtime. The catch is that if you don't want it paid out, if you want it going into your comp time bank, which is unique to government, that's a comp time, you know, in private industry you have no comp, it's paid, it's overtime, you earned it, you get paid. In our case, we have the option of going to comp time. So you have to default one to the other. We're defaulting, and the system defaults at payout, overtime. If you don't want to pay out, you want to get comp, then you have to go in and say comp.
Right. Okay.
And so that is maybe a challenge. I mean, it's a timing thing. If he's got a lot of that every day, then it will take time to go back in. The other thing I want to say, though, is that if he's got a lot of that every day, then the system is actually fulfilling its purpose. It's bringing to light that something's not, you know, because we really shouldn't have a lot of overtime every day. That's either you're short... You know, you need another position, maybe? Or is that what it's telling you?
I think for him, what he was telling me is that structurally the stuff that comes up, a leaky water faucet at the whatever,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
happens at the jail, it can't wait
immediately.
Till tomorrow.
Right, right.
Doug's getting up in the middle of the night, you know, going down to the jail and doing what he's done.
And we've
we're
got,
not hiring another person 24/7 to just stand around as a super to.
And we've got callback. I mean, that's already built in there, so he can access that. But you know, so it's
It used to be.
It's just a matter of getting used to it.
It used to be really fluid with them that you know they would keep track and say, okay, well this is going to be called, you know, yesterday's deal, or this is going to be overtime. It's just. It's a little bit more cumbersome for them to have to, you know.
They have to do it on a computer rather than put it on paper.
So his is a little unique. I mean, it's even more different than public works and what they're doing with their different projects. But, you know, they'll have emergencies. We're going to have those situations of rainstorms and snow and people working out the rules, the parameters.
And the system handles all that. I think it's a matter of learning to utilize that system versus...
That's what I told Ryan. I said, we're all going to give this some time, and then if we need to sit down and reevaluate and say, look, I know the system. These are all the obstacles that I'm working with, and it's costing me this in time. I'm not going to hire another person to accomplish just doing electronic timekeeping. We had this conversation. I said, then we're not going to do it for you. You know,
and but
we have to give it a go.
But we have to give it a go. That's it. That's the whole idea.
You have to know all of the positives, all of the options for solving these obstacles, employ them before we say, it's not worth it.
Right, because sometimes the only way we are learning what's working or not working is to actually do it. Yeah,
and that's what That's what I told the individual who has not been engaged. You know, well, it just doesn't work. I said, but you haven't tried it.
Yeah.
If you're not using it, how do you know it doesn't work?
Before we can determine, I said, because as I understand, the reason this program was selected is that we can make all kinds of adjustments for various departments, various circumstances, and until you tell us what's not working, we can't fix it.
Well, and that department was involved in the comparison and selection of this particular program versus the other two that we looked at. So we looked at three of them all together, and that department was involved in the selection of this one because it actually worked better for them and their circumstances.
Well, so it's kind of like a debate. If you don't know the other side's argument, if you haven't tried it, and you can't tell us all the reasons why it doesn't work, then you're stuck. You're going to lose that argument.
Yeah. And that I lean heavy on that. Until you implement it and until you use it, we can't help you fix it.
and it is being used and implemented in many, many, many other locations. So.
Well, there are some real positives. It is exposing some things that we may not have even known, you know, about those. How many instances does a dog get up in the middle of the night? And if it's you know, 3-4 times a week, then we start looking at maybe we split shift out.
Maybe we need a night shift person that does nothing but take calls.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it's not fair to Doug to have to do that. That interrupts. That's not a life.
But then the system's bringing to light exactly what it should be, you know, things that maybe in days gone by would have been unknown or not really communicated. This is the same,
because so, he's having to get up every single night, or at least even 3 out of 5 nights. Maybe we need a person who's a night person.
Yeah.
That's all they do is take call at night. They may not be full time. Because we don't need them full time, but that's all they do.
And this ensures then that time is, you know, accurately recorded, compliant with the union rules and BOLI rules, and so I think it's good. I think it's good.
All right.
We're several things that I'm working on. I do want to bring up. I've talked to Rob Brandis a couple times now. Email on the public works assessment. We're moving forward with that project. That's been a loose end for a while now, but I think we're in a good spot, specifically and especially because we're looking at the loss of SRS funding has already ended. You know, that's a $1 million hit to the PW budget. So as Rob and I have talked about it, it's an appropriate time to take a look at to ensure that we're doing things the most effective, efficient,
positive way. So what is the timeline on that?
Well, right now I'm gathering the information. I've got several examples Here's a city of the Dalles that has is just initiating it right now, a review of their organizational operational structure, getting implementable recommendations. I've got one from Yamhill County that they went through. Implementable recommendations, yes. That's a very good. Versus unimplementable recommendations.
Or non-implementable.
So I'm gathering the data together. Rob and I will put together a request for proposal. I've got eight specific companies right now that will make sure they get that RFP. But it'll be a general distribution. That's a long way of saying we're at the front end of the time frame. I would expect it to be done, though, before the end of the year, before December. My goal is to have it done soon enough in November-ish, December-ish, so that we can incorporate that into the...
Is there any recommendations to build into the budget for the fall?
Yes, to build it into the budget, yes. So that's my goal.
That's my goal.
That's his goal.
We're going to have to figure this out. It's not a sustainable model into the future without a substitute for this revenue stream.
Yeah.
And people suggesting that there's just $1 million of surplus that just came in, that we don't have a need for it in that department, which is designated for, is a bunch of short-sighted, frankly irresponsible kind of conversation with how the county had been previous sometimes, or, They look at one budget year as a cycle. And frankly, that's not how you run government. It's not how you maintain road infrastructure that has a 20-year lifespan. If you don't maintain it, with the state's doing the same thing with the visioning thing. We've got trillions of dollars of infrastructure. We're talking about these multimodal and all this other stuff. Meanwhile, Rome is crumbling. You can't maintain this trillion-dollar infrastructure you have. And we're in the same situation. And the decisions that people will look back on in 10 years for potholes down roads, why didn't the board do more to plan for this kind of thing 10 years ago? And that's where we're at right now, and we need to really start with looking at the department, because frankly what Rob has inherited and not really been responsible for, but when we had 80 people in our public works department, some things changed, some things didn't. It wasn't looked as like, let's build a department based on this amount of revenue that we know we have, this amount of assets, this amount of road responsibility. That's what we're going to do. And we haven't done that. We just kind of attritioned to this place. And it might be exactly what it looks like. But nobody's ever looked at it and said, this is the best you can do with what you have. And I think we need to do that assessment.
Well, and if you look at the trend, of course, I'm sure you do, a financial trend over time, it's not like that is a financially well supported department. It has appeared to be because it gets road dollars.
Mm-hmm.
But road dollars are not going to sustain it for the next 5 years, with what needs to be done. So
they're also in the starting their road maintenance plan for the next 10 years.
System transportation and
STP.
STP.
Yeah. So that dovetails very nicely with this, because then we can look at that and say, for that plan, what's the best structure for maintenance, for the staffing, for the administration?
Mm-hmm. So I think Public Works is being incredibly proactive. We're doing an assessment of all of our bridge infrastructure, which was one of our greatest points of liability, and making sure that we've already got that assessment when the state does their transportation plan or funding package this next year, and at the end of that cycle there might be money left over, we won't have to go out and hire a plan to have, we will know. We have these 10 bridges, it will cost this, we can provide this match, and boom, we'll be right there ready. The other thing is this will point out the shortcomings in our, be able to maintain our infrastructure, and really tell the state, look, you have your responsibilities, but you feed into our responsibility, and this is a partnership here. And we need this as far as gas tax revenue to maintain our system, given that Secure Rural Schools, those road dollars, is gone. And that's going to be really valuable, I think, to the legislature to say, it's not just the state's issues, it's the county's issues too. And they know exactly what they've got because they just did an assessment last year. It's not figures from 2003 or 2006. It was last year. So I think that's going to be really helpful. And frankly, other counties are looking to do the exact same thing. As the state is preparing their transportation package, we need to have the most accurate data to tell them what our shortfall is too, so they can look at it.
So you think this can be completed by the end of the year?
I think so. Yeah. The contract will go out. For example, here's TKW Talbot Corvola Warwick. They just submitted this in July to the city of the Dalles, and they're anticipating beginning project anticipated to require approximately 5 to 6 weeks to complete.
That would be good. So then because when the legislature starts in February, the information would be already available.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm hoping we'll get the RFP out next week and be able to evaluate, get some things done, hopefully get them started by September-ish sometime and schedule that in.
That's real good.
Yeah. And the final thing then, although I have more here, but the final I'll mention is I did submit the CDBG application to for the Food and Friends project for the housing rehab thing.
Sounds like they're really.
Yeah, I see they've done really well in their fundraising.
Oh, man.
They're just within 50,000, is it?
It's close.
Yeah.
50,000, 60,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have beat the bushes very effectively.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They sure have. Well, thank
that's
you.
Well, it's kind of like what we have done here. Is it we just with parks, with
seed money,
works. I mean, excuse me, with public health and the fairgrounds. It's just if you lay out expectations and say, you can do this. You know, why are you floundering in a facility that you were not supposed to be there for very long in the first place? We need to do something. We'll be a partner. We'll do the CBDG, mm-hmm. whatever it takes. But let's quit just making do in a facility that doesn't work really for anybody very well. Mm-hmm. Let's solve the problem long term,
right,
as opposed to kicking the can down the road. I'm pretty proud of this board that does this. We take these things head on and we don't kick the can, and that's really important to me. I don't want to leave a legacy of, you know, that the idea
head
that we inherited issues that have been floundering for literally decades. The Demick Tank Campus, the North Valley Sewer District, the Fruit and Friends, they're little things sometimes. The Lee's Boat Rent, 1997, they've had that issue out there.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have these issues anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's kind of.
Someday there might not even be a need for a. I'm just kidding.
There's a need for a board.
Yeah. I'm just kidding.
One that is doing their work, actually.
Yeah.
Thank you, Arthur.
Appreciate it.
Okay, now we have parks.
Now we have.
Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Sorry for my lateness.
Not at all.
Well, we figured that maybe that, you know, with all your leisure time that you
have. Yeah,
right. That's getting late. Don't mind me.
Isn't it nice to be able to joke and not have somebody criticizing? Okay. Just comments.
Yeah.
Okay.
Appreciate it. So general parks update for you. At this time, I'm proud to report we are finally at full staff with parks. In fact, after speaking to my liaison, I did have permission to float one extra ranger for the next month and a half. So we actually have 6 rangers instead of 5 rangers on board because one of our rangers, Roy, has put in his retirement and will be retiring on October 1st. So we're ahead of the curve with training his replacement to ensure we're no longer chasing our tail with staffing.
And a good person?
Great person. The 3 hires we made, everybody just fits great like a jigsaw, and everybody's getting along. They're go-getters, friendly people who are passionate about parks, which is what we need in order to continue with the budget situation that we have. We need the hard workers that are in it.
Perfect.
So it's all going well. We have been holding our OYTC program, which has been a continual thing for over 10 years, is my understanding. So those are at-risk youth that are hired through our department. They've been repainting all the boat ramps.
So all the restriping's done, improving facilities, a little bit of maintenance as well with removing weeds and stuff, repainting bathrooms, fixed a boat dock out at Lake Selmac. The little things, but that program ends this week because it was only a 6-week program. But the rest of my park staff is busy repainting all the roads through the parks and the parking stalls. So we just continue to improve the facilities that we have on site. We had purchased 20 new trash cans. This was like a 3-month procedure from the time you put in the order, and we receive it, a small engineering thing on there in that they had to fix with the lids fitting correctly. But essentially, they're nice metal trash cans with dome lids, and those have been installed in all of our shelters. We decided to put them in facilities that people are paying to rent. So hopefully that'll also help us continue to improve shelters and get more reservations. I plan to be moving in the direction of purchasing metal benches. The first round will be this winter, and those will be installed in shelters as well. My goal would be for these shelters to be at 90% occupancy during peak season on weekends. There's no reason why they shouldn't be reserved. Other park projects we have going on?
Metal benches under shelters? Wouldn't metal benches outside be? I'm just thinking the weathering is protected, maybe.
Yeah, it seems like the rain certainly does wreak havoc a little more on the wooden benches. But if you have wooden benches in shelters where people are having weddings, it's going to be a lot less attractive to those kinds of reservations. People also continually use staples and tapes and other things to put all their decorations and table covers, and that ruins the wood benches pretty quick. Especially if they're forgot their cutting board and they're going to cut their cake or hot dogs or whatever they're cutting. So I agree. The goal would be to have better benches throughout all of our systems and slowly migrate from wood altogether.
Okay.
But if we can generate the revenue by strategically placing them, that would be my goal.
No, that's
not. So you mentioned the CXT. Thank goodness it's finally moving forward. We released last Friday the opening of the bid for construction. So at this point, local companies, any companies really, can bid on that, and we're hoping, have stated that they have to begin construction by the end of September and complete it by mid-October. The CXT prefab building itself is already built and sitting on their facility. Since it's been such a long drawn-out process, they went ahead and built it anyway. So by the end of October, this should be 100% completed and ready to go for winterization of winter. But it will be ready for spring next year. We didn't want to push off this project to early spring and run into more hitches or possibly lose the grant money there. Let's see. Schroeder update. After further research, the sewer lines at Schroeder had failed, and we originally thought that it was only on 3 of the sites. But when we pulled our plans after we had another backup of sewer, discovered it is all 11 sites on the right hand of Schroeder. So essentially all those sites at this time are off of our reservation calendar and are walk-ins only, and that's because we can't offer them as full hookups, but then still use the electricity, of course, on site. So they're still being utilized, just not perhaps as heavily as they may be if reservations were available. We are moving forward with that project. We've chosen an engineer who's going to be designing how that hooks into the street. So as soon as he has those plans completed, that goes to city for them to approve, and then we'll be going out to bid for the construction portion of Schroeder. Mm-hmm. So we're moving forward with that one at least.
Now, and again, I mean, commending you for what you are doing in the oversight and trying to resolve issues before they become problems. The Schroeder situation would be a problem that had been for a while it has not been resolved, and then we end up with this total collapse. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, it is. Yeah, this is a retroactive. It happened, so we're responding.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I would love to be in the situation where we're being proactive and being able to take care of deferred maintenance before it's an emergency.
Sure, yeah.
Because it hits the department a lot harder.
But again, I mean, the old penny wise and pound foolish. You're saving money in the front end because you're not having to do the repairs, but the cost becomes exponentially higher because you have not made those smaller repairs.
Agreed.
Do the whole thing. So.
And not to make an excuse, but I just don't feel like the department felt they had the breathing room.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't have the dollars to really.
Sure.
And now, I mean, your property reserve is pushing $200,000 or something like that. I mean, there's breathing room. You're in the black.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you're not starting from the red the way you're there and you're moving forward. It's just, I think it's phenomenal.
Yeah, and I'm blessed that the work that Dorian did, mm-hmm. my predecessor, obviously putting us in a situation where now we are gaining financial strength and mm-hmm. we're healthy so we can move forward.
That really is the point. It's not assessing blame for somebody for not doing anything, but to deal with the reality of where it was mm-hmm. and how it was handled. You cannot resolve problems if you don't have resources.
Right.
But yet, on the other hand, the resources were planned and set aside back when the difficulties were.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Now we've got the latitude to be able to do some things. But sometimes people think, well, how come you didn't do this? There are very good reasons. We didn't have the money to do it, or we didn't have the whatever. Now, because of actions taken back, now you have these situations that you can address and do something about. So,
well, again, it's the taking the initiative to do the minutiae that needed to be done with the property mm-hmm. situation to get that money in here.
We're being creative.
That's been a long process.
Solid waste agency funds. I don't know that we parks had ever even explored that, mm-hmm. but you know, you have to be creative about where can I get some funds mm-hmm. for this.
Is that what the money is coming for you?
They have covered the $32,000 for SDCs.
Mm-hmm.
And
have a substantial impediment.
Huge.
You're going to hook up mm-hmm. all of this to the city sewer. So.
Yeah, and they have also stated that if you know something happens when we have more solid numbers, I can come back to them. So we'll see how our financials are once we have real hard numbers. But yes, huge help to ensure that this happens so that we're not taking it out
Absolutely.
Of other improvements we need.
Yeah.
Very good. White Horse, we are in negotiations with an engineer company to move forward with the construction plans for the White Horse remodel of the park that will be split into three phases. I'm in fact meeting them today or tomorrow. I'll have to look at my calendar, but I think it's this afternoon on site out at White Horse just so they can get a picture and then they can come back and propose their timeline, scope of work, and actual fees so that we can see if they're going to be the actual company we work with.
Great.
So that's moving along. After we have those plans, I have spoke to BLM. They are interested in fast-pacing all their bottom stuff as well, which means increasing the amount of trails for wildlife, moving their boat ramp, that sort of stuff. So it seems like we might be able to help piggyback off of the groups, the public groups, to get support for our portion as well.
Cool.
So that would help us get grant money for our portion.
And there again, this whole design idea began a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it was not the plan for here, the color plan. I mean, that, okay. Now, some of those have changed, obviously. But yet the planning for this whole thing began back.
Years.
But it started back there. And that,
yeah, it started
there.
3 years ago, and it really was this board's decision to break up the economic development grants. Before, when we were allocating $40,000, for me, it felt like it was just going in to the general operations and nothing project-wise was ever getting accomplished. You can't cut off the spigot entirely, but what we decided was to split it in half and say, now, you got $20,000 to do with the project. Well, then it kind of freed it up. It gave a priority to it, and you know, Doreen and the Parks Board decided, we need a plan. We need a vision for what this can be done. And that's really what started this whole process of mm-hmm. getting it moving. And it really wasn't that much of a change. It just was saying, you can't just keep dumping it into maintaining. You have to look to the future a little mm-hmm. bit and improve.
And that takes time.
It does. And energy and resources.
Yep.
And that's all that was.
Yeah.
And I think that served the departments that get those money as well.
One of our biggest complaints, just something for you guys to program in, it's going to be coming in the future, is the lake weed out at Lake Salmac and how much that impairs, you know, boating, fishing, swimming. The weeds have just been taking over that. In a hard freeze, they would naturally kill off all the weeds, but we haven't had a hard freeze. So in our PAB meeting this last time, we decided that in spring, we're going to be looking towards a community day. We have several volunteers that would like to help us kind of drag the bottom, where you cut the weeds, they float to the top, and then you remove them. So is not a permanent solution, but would certainly make the lake usable for summer. So we'll be aiming for that in spring. It is getting bad. It just we haven't had a freeze in several years.
A guy on
there
Facebook.
We go.
I think that's
a thornhill. Yeah.
So the timing will come right as we've done the toilets and have the footbridge, and we'll also be getting rid of the weeds. So the residents out there as well as tourists should be pretty satisfied with Lake Salmac before we go into the
construction of the dam, of course.
I know the bass association out there, the bass fishers, they came in and they spent an hour with us talking about different options and stuff. And it really would be interesting if it wasn't just, I mean, what we should do with that is obviously compost it someplace, all this stuff, because it's actually really quality stuff. But it would be interesting to work with, like, Oregon State University on an energy project where they take that and they render it into some biofuel or something. I don't know. That may be more complicated than just actually, but you said it may not actually solve the problem long term, and I don't know what that solution would be. I think we'd want to try to avoid chemical application, because that
solve a lot of issues.
That isn't really, that's contributing.
Yeah, the herbicide is what's continually recommended. My issue is we make drinking water out of that lake, so I'm hesitant, but I know there's a lot of studies about that work. You know, conversations with Dory before I left, who Larry has actually graciously put me in contact with the correct person who had those conversations. So we're starting to look at options. I know you can introduce fish and snails. Mm-hmm. I'm worried about introducing a new species to the lake as well.
Yeah.
But we will be looking at kind of long-term situations.
Well, none of those species were there before 1954 or something. So
yeah.
You know. All man-made.
That's so. Yeah, and if the lake was deeper, this would really not be a huge issue.
I was going to say, when is the lowest water level in the lake?
When we make it?
Tell you.
Probably right now. Probably September.
It's not used for irrigation, is it?
No.
It's just recreation.
You do irrigate out of it.
Just some
for Lake Salmac itself, but not to private residents.
No, yeah.
Okay, so we could draw it down, and that would really be make it easier to control those weeds, because then you could go in there, and you could use any kind of equipment you wanted to drag it through there to get it out.
The problem with what the bass fisher people were saying is that the stumps weren't removed. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, it's not like a clean bottom lake where you could just drag. They were saying you put two boats with a barbed wire, you know, and a couple of weights, and they're just going to catch stump after stump on the bottom.
Nobody ever removes stumps when they do that.
But that's good
habitat.
That's right.
So it's like you can't just remove those.
Yeah. Yeah.
But too much algae is a bad thing. Too little is also. So maybe we just give it a shot. We're not going to get it perfect out of it.
Yeah. Well,
I'm sure that you and or the board that you've talked with different agencies like OSU, because to me saying that would be a wonderful project for OSU to take on and to remediate this issue, mm-hmm. and they would take that on as a study kind of a thing for their students.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been looked at? Is there any reciprocity in that?
So far by me, no. Have not investigated that, but something that could certainly be done in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that was interesting to me is for the first few years of this lake's life, Public Works actually used to be involved with dredging the bottom of the lake every year.
Hmm.
They had a huge bucket that they would drag and collect the silt that continually runs in through the streams and discard it. That would help keep this lake deep. And I believe that severed sometime in the early 70s. But I'm curious to get more information on that, and we'll be working with Public Works to see what did they use and where did they do it at, because that tells me some part of the lake would be dredgeable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cycle Organ is coming to Indian Mary mid-September, so that's going to be a huge thing for our community. We're just getting ready to prepare the park, bringing all the trees up to the standard 14 feet to ensure their rigs can get in. They have an estimated 2,200 bikers.
You're biking, aren't you?
I'll tell you later what I have plans. I got.
But that'll be great for our facility, for tourism, and they give us a good size revenue check that we'll be able to pour right back into that facility as well.
Sure. No, it has to be able to be used. Otherwise.
Yes.
That's commendable for the orchestra in that too. So.
Absolutely. Other than that, I did sit down with the property manager and looked at some of the properties that we have. I've proposed a couple that obviously will be coming through you guys here in the near future. We have a parcel up by Pine Cone, which is a good chunk of land. It's on the Illinois River, I believe. But it's just so far out there, and it's really rugged. We don't foresee that ever being developed, so it's a problem property that we're proposing to just be done with, as we don't see a potential for a park in that area.
And then some parcels with Cathedral Hills that may be in the best interest of BLM.
Mm-hmm.
And some just unusable parcels. So I've been working on
with
that.
Another parcel for BLM that we want to trade. So you remember there were three. There's the wildlife boat ramp at Hog, the boat parking at Hog Creek, White Horse boat ramp. It's the tree farm in the Applegate. Mm-hmm. They want to divest themselves of that. And I think it would be really cool to put an RV park because there's all these nice trees in this flat open space that's all got irrigation and stuff like that. And then it's one of the access points to the Applegate because there isn't really a lot of public access right on the border of Josephine, Jackson County. I just think it would be really, really a cool entity for that whole valley in there, Applegate and Williams area. So that would be high on the list to try to acquire through trade.
Yeah. I agree.
Those are the four. I got to remember there's...
Write them down, Simon.
I know.
Write them down. Write them down.
Yeah, I can't remember.
As you get older, you need to write them down more often.
More every day. Like, there's only so much room up there.
Trust me, Jerry, it's true.
And then this winter, we'll be focusing our efforts on marketing. We don't have brochures or really great advertising for our park, so my goal would be each camping location has its own brochure, new photos, and really do a whole marketing push, including a new logo for the Parks Department so that we can become a brand and be recognized by tourists. So you'll be seeing that as it's developed.
One of those things that just came to me yesterday when I was at the fair is that that element on Facebook where you check in,
yeah,
and then all of your friends know that you were... I don't ever use that, but I did yesterday. I checked in at the fair, but if there was that, you know, thing where every park had an ability, you could just find it. Right now, I don't know that you would... You'd find Selmac Lake, right? You might... I don't know what else you would find, but definitely Selmac Lake. Checking in is a way... That word of mouth to other, you know, friends of friends,
mm-hmm.
is a huge way to advertise something. People really respond to that, vineyards and different things. They all have that point that you can just, when you type it in, and it comes up, you know, Del Rio Vineyard or whatever. That's a very simple way to integrate in our Facebook thing. That,
yeah.
You know, RVers know other RVers. And then,
they see the beautiful photos and want to be there, too.
Exactly.
We do manage I'm wanting to say it's about 12 Facebook pages for parks. So we have a Facebook page for each of our camping locations. Josephine County Parks has its own, and then some of our popular day-use parks as well.
Cool.
The other advantage to checking is you can see their photos. So you can kind of just check and see what kind of rules they may be breaking and be able to have a back-end control as well.
You see names?
Yep, QR codes. Absolutely.
Yes. Mm-hmm. When I was just now, I traveled in the Netherlands this spring. They had those embedded in walls,
mm-hmm.
sidewalks, parks, everywhere, and all you had to do is click on it. It would tell you all about the thing, the area you were in, or the museum mm-hmm. you were in, or whatever, or where mm-hmm. to find and stuff.
More depth than I am, I've never used.
Yeah, eventually the QR codes would be linked to our interactive GIS map, so then you can see the facilities in the park, walking trails, things to do.
Yeah. Yeah, this one was on a piece of stainless steel in a museum, but I saw them on ceramic stones, pavers.
Anything you can print on, right?
Yeah, and some of them would be, you know, pretty good size.
Yeah.
Just put my phone on it, and it would tell me where I was and what was there and what to look for.
You
are lost. Yeah. The technology is great, and it's great.
I agree, lost one, but...
Do we need to do anything? You had mentioned changing the parks policy for allowing longer term camping from October. I think that was your season, October, November to April or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Is that a board set policy of restricting it? And if so, do we have to do it like a board order to change that?
What it is it's in the ordinance, and I'm actually going to be proposing and taking it to the PAB this next week, and then I'll be coming to you guys to change several ordinance and also look at fee changes coming up when we do the big batch. But yes, it does right now say in the ordinance you can only stay for 28 days in any six-month period. So basically, if we were just change that without written permission of the director, then we could work on a program where it would be our agreement
that you're
to stay there.
The director, that mm-hmm. makes a lot of sense.
That would be
my question is why does it have to, what was the rationale that it had to be an ordinance? back when?
I don't know the rationale on it being in the ordinance. However, it does prevent people from living in our parks.
Well, but why couldn't you not have that as a park board? You just have that as the park director. Well, no, the park board comes up and says, this is our recommendation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's posted. You can only say, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't understand why it had to be in the ordinance.
I don't either.
If it's an ordinance, you can get legal enforcement. If you have somebody that moves in there and says, I've been here 6 months and I ain't leaving, this is my home.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. Right. Then you can go to court and go through all the eviction stuff. If you didn't have that, you wouldn't be able to do it.
But on that note, Mr. Harris, correct, I'm looking at utilizing places like Schroeder, who close ultimately everything but 11 sites during the winter. I don't see why those aren't open and why we're not raking in revenue during the winter. We already have to pay full service for our hookups to sewer. The bathrooms and showers are already open, so really it'd be a little bit of cost with trash and electricity, which you can pass right back through to somebody with a week-to-week agreement.
And might have a better clientele of people that are staying there.
We could control who could stay there. Right. Absolutely. It would help drive out the transient issue that we do have during winter.
Yeah.
So I'm getting recommendations from other counties and public or private RV parks to see what they do, and we'll be packaging a program for you guys.
The problem is that our ordinance process takes at least 90 days to become 100% effective. It doesn't mean that you couldn't do things under the ordinance within that 90 days that's appealable. But I wouldn't expect a park ordinance to be appealed. But it's a cumbersome process.
Yeah.
I think that's why why does it have to be an ordinance?
Okay.
It's not as quick and dirty as an order, resolution by the board.
Mm-hmm.
And so we may want to talk about those things. What does need to be codified by ordinance that gives you the authority to do stuff? Mm-hmm. It doesn't inhibit your ability to kind of make administrative changes. So be a little bit more dynamic and not so hard and fast. Because this board is held by those same rules.
Yeah.
An ordinance that everybody else has. We can't just do whatever. So we can change them. Nobody else can change. Well, the public can change them too. We'll work on that.
Perfect.
And you brought up the fees, so Arthur's still in the room. I think it's an important time with the new planning director. I put together, as the board had dictated last year in January, we should have done it a little bit earlier, as a comprehensive review of all of the fees having to do with the treasurer, public works, assessors, planning, building and safety, to make sure when somebody's coming in for a lot line adjustment or a road access permit, that they're not going to five different departments being charged $20 or $200 at each department. And, you know, there's a reason why when they come down to the assessor's office being the last place that they're pretty upset. But nobody's ever taken a comprehensive review of, like, how many places do they have to go? And what all, you know, how much is this costing to do the whole, we know how much planning's cost, charging for a lot line adjustment, but we don't know what Public Works is charging or the assessor's office is charging or anything else. So that's what I'm looking to try to do, like, now. I know that conversations with Julie, I'm going to have that done, ready, a report in January. No, because the report in January will be too late. We do fee adjustments, you may not know this, twice a year, but only for emergency kind of a situation, what the legislature is supposed to do in the short session to fix anything they didn't get right in the long session. It's not for a comprehensive, you know, rework in June.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be like, you know what, we got that parks one
do
wrong.
That in January.
We're having that problem.
Yeah.
We need to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we don't do fee adjustments in June. They need to be done in January so that everybody starts the year out knowing these are the rules. This is what it's going to cost, and we don't do mid-year adjustments. So.
Well, okay. That you got that message when?
Yeah, right. Well, it all got...
Big six.
Yeah. Not the way.
He's taking notes over here.
So, yeah, maybe putting out that request for fee adjustment conversations. You and I should talk about the parks one.
Absolutely.
Those have been adjusted over time, and this board, previous board, kind of made commitments. We're not going to adjust this one. So
understood. Yeah, and
there
some
are
of them,
things we could do, but some things we committed to.
Are you going to put that out?
Got
today
it.
You see, staying at five.
Absolutely.
For
yeah, and it's more things like shelters. I'm actually rounding down, and some of them bringing down drastically. They're not being reserved, so we need to be competitive.
Cool.
So we'll look at those.
Yeah. Always a good thing. Thanks.
Anything else? Questions?
Okay. Thank you. Good job.
Appreciate it.
appreciate your time.
I think Arthur's going to start gathering information on doing that comprehensive review to compare the departments. I know Julie and I have had that conversation. She said,
yeah, it needs to be looked at.
Yeah.
I asked Terry to send out a meeting invitation. You actually weren't on it, but we'll get you clued in. But I wanted to have that conversation with new, especially Julie, to talk to Public Works and the assessors and everybody else involved to say, the surveyor, I didn't include the surveyor, to say, you know, this is the scope of what the board is intent to look at last January. When we had proposals, but we held them off because we hadn't had that review. And I know the assessor's office didn't get some fees, but they were looking at adjusting either up or down. And so we should start communicating now. So, because that process is not short for publication. So we'll get it done.
Okie doke. All right. Board business. Resolution number 2016-055 in the matter of an appointment to the Emergency Medical Services Board. And this is...
a neat old guy. I'm just a neat guy.
It definitely will change the atmosphere of the meetings.
Yeah.
I don't know this person.
He's a well-intentioned guy who's got all kind of practical and personal experience. And
yeah, his resume looks
he's
good.
He can tend to be a rough cob of an individual, but yet it's always done with a element of kindness. But he's got all kinds of life experiences and professional experiences. And he's not going to just sit back and acquiesce or whatever. They'll have his input. But yet, if the decision is made, then finally he has no problem along with it. He's an interesting guy.
Robert this Chene. This must be a member at large.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I guess he has an approved recommendation from somebody.
Okay, Luke. Move that one forward.
Well, you're the liaison, and I'm going to look to you for. I mean, obviously, Commissioner Heck knows the guy.
Well, I know him from the Mental Health Advisory Board. He's been involved in that for a number of years.
I shouldn't say that I don't know him, because I probably do. He sounds familiar.
Probably when we see him, we're going to know him, but I just can't place the name.
Well, do you anticipate that he would be a stakeholder? I'm an old guy that may need emergency medical service. And that's Robert. That's his Robert. Okay.
You think he's old enough?
Oh, he is old enough.
I'm sure
okay.
I know him.
Shall we move this forward?
I know him.
Cool.
Okay. All right. Any other matters from commissioners?
I need to bring to the board's attention, thank you very much, Commissioner Heck, for reminding me. What often happens is I put a pile here and one of the other piles, and it doesn't get brought up. The Allen Creek Road proposal has been, I would say, addressed just cursory review adequately. All of our concerns for a jog that mitigates the impact to certain home owners along the way doesn't provide for that landing strip kind of style. This isn't a really great printout if you don't have 2010 vision to see how the road is divided up. From a lane perspective, there's a semi-multimodal path type of a thing. What they've done, instead of having the 2-foot planter strip adjacent to the road in between the sidewalk, is they put trees with the ADA-compatible metal grates over them. So you're expanding the width of the sidewalk, so to speak, by providing that. You're reducing the overall cost of maintenance to the city over time, as if it'd just be trees, it wouldn't be grass to mow and other vegetation to weed. There is still bike lanes in either direction, and the sidewalks are wide enough and will be signed to accommodate those bicyclists who want to use them. So I think the city's emphasis for making this into a really substantial thoroughfare, they're considering not putting their soccer massive complex, the soccer complex in that area.
My understanding, the school district doesn't want to do that.
Yeah, it's not exactly. It's kind of funny that, you know, the Bubble Dog oh, wait, we didn't talk to the school.
Right. So the school is not on board.
They've got other ideas.
School district, I should say.
Yeah,
is the not
school
on board.
District.
School district, which
ideas.
Is the one that was going to come up with funding.
Partially, yeah.
Yeah, they're
they've,
not. On board.
They've got other ideas for their long term. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
I think this is progress. This is in the direction I think I'm going to want to sit down with Laura Glover and Ralph Randis and really work out some of the specifics. But the cursory review, that's what we expected to see more along the lines of 2 months ago.
Yeah, because I know I haven't met with them recently, but I've gone over and talked to them, and I've talked to our people down here about the mapping and how it would be done.
Well, we weren't asking for something.
No, we weren't, but we were holding our ground. And I think they finally got the message that we were not going to go along with the, if you call it the landing strip.
No, that
I call it the drag strip.
Yeah.
That which appears to be
a jog.
A jump. Is that a does that go down this way?
Yeah, it's about 6 feet.
Okay.
It's about a 6 foot jog as far as what I've been told. Now, these are just preliminary plans.
Right. Yeah.
But that's. But
just look at this, looking like a takeoff spot.
There is an intent to do a jaw there, and that's
really
what we were looking for. And I don't know if it's appropriate. I think at this time, I'd like us to extend an invitation. It'll be a public meeting that once a month this board sits down with the council president, the mayor, and the city manager, and we invite them to come over and talk with us about issues that we, you know, projects that we could work on together, things that, you know, we early and often communication, I think, solves a lot of our problems. And I don't want it to be every time that we have from an urban growth boundary conversation to this road project, that when we put out, like anything else, our intent to go to an electronic time card, that's not really an option. This is a directive from the Board of Commissioners, and we're expecting it to happen, or there's got to be a very good reason why it isn't going to happen. The same thing with our expectation of this. I don't know how you can have an engineer come back with a plan that we're not going to approve. It's our road right now, and we don't have to improve it. The constituents in that area don't want it to be approved. It's really serving the best interests of the city. So in order for us to, you know, get past that threshold, and I don't want it to be a demanding kind of a thing, but there has to be, we were very clear about the parameters on this project of it can't look like a drag strip or runway. It has to look like this. It has to impact the least number of property owners, you know, to the least degree. And those were very clear things. We wanted to look at getting more people off, the bikers off the road if possible. We had those kinds of things, and they've gotten there, but they spent about $100,000 on engineering, in my understanding, and I could be way off, that we were never going to approve. And so I feel bad as the city's sending that.
I wouldn't feel bad. I don't feel badly because they were told.
Well, the city, the taxpayers are sending that money.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Unfortunate.
Yeah. The city taxpayer?
You are. You, as a city taxpayer, are spending money. You didn't have to.
I would think I'd probably say every month would be a little excessive. Every quarter, I think it would be more than five.
Four times?
Yeah. And we could try that right here and become
a positive.
We ended up here, we could have probably fast-tracked that better if we'd had more communication, because I'd be
clean. In talking about, their incremental finance agency, I would have loved to have heard talked about that 2 months before we were given a report. This is in the queue. Expect this. Any ideas of stuff that you wouldn't want, would want, you know, because we're one of the most significant contributors, even though our tax rate's so low. This isn't getting compensated. We're not getting backfilled by the state, like the school district. So I think, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for this to be a back and forth kind of conversation. Little stuff,
well,
the justice building.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a conversation. You know, how this property stuff makes progress, because we meet about it, you know, every Tuesday or whatever. If we talk about it once a year when something is wrong, that's not a good time to bring it up. So,
and you're all react.
If you guys are receptive to that, I think we could just extend the invitation and say, hopefully Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, figure out a time to put it on the calendar. Good.
Well, that the city plan that they adopted on the for all of the blight that they're talking about, and they said, well, there's a lot of blight at that end, you know, the exit where you come in, and I'm going, really? We have Winco. We have Walmart. We have Fred Meyer. We have new restaurants. I don't think it's very blighted over there. They've invested a lot of money over there. So now they're going to be collecting money to put into something else.
Yeah.
What they're going to be putting in is their sewer plant. They were, and then he talked about this over here. I found out who wants to do that now.
What?
That was an upfront deal before this was put in. Sorry. I'm not happy. The person who wants to buy the Caveman Shopping Center and develop it.
Oh.
That was a discussion before that was approved.
Oh.
So...
likely.
What's going to happen? It's going to be favoring certain.
Well, that's unfortunate. The public dollars are going to go to finance what, you know, maybe they'd have public contributions, whoever owns it now, made those accommodations.
Yeah.
Well, that's not necessarily our wheelhouse.
It's not.
Not our monkeys.
It's not. It is not. So, okay. Liaison updates.
Fair is underway.
Yep.
Well, I see you're ready to go out and drive a cart. I'm going to drive a cart today, too. That's why I'm just, like, patriotic here. I'm going to go drive a cart this afternoon, and then I'm going to go sit in a booth, and I'm going to do my once-a-year cotton candy and corn dog. Once a year. You were at the fair yesterday. Did you hear your cotton candy and corn dog yesterday?
No, Arthur and I had Casa Amiga. We did our walkthrough. We looked at some of the financial stuff. I know that was a challenge we had, and they've made incredible progress over
Casa
the
Casa Amigo.
They've got a booth where the Lions Club used to be.
Oh, yeah. I ate there last year, too.
There, yeah.
In addition to the hot dog.
But it's really good. It was really good food. It was a little warm. Of course, I was overdressed in my cowboy boots and stuff, but it cooled off in the evening.
Yeah.
JJ was over there in the evening. He's the smartest guy in the room to go with him at night.
I think it was a pretty good turnout at night, too, was it?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, so that was good.
We were there from about 6 to about 9:30.
Oh, great.
Peggy's holding her breath.
Yeah.
3:30 in the afternoon, she was holding her breath.
Yeah, that's what time we had a quarter to two. Good.
Well, getting ready to hold your number up to bid.
Mentioned that I think I'm inclined to do that. I'm fairly frugal. Somebody has to buy the cheapest pig at the auction, and I'd be happy to be that guy.
Whatever pig you buy, we agree that we're going to go one third, right?
Okay? Whatever pig he buys, he buy the grand champions.
No. He said he's frugal. We're not buying the grand champions.
But given a blank check from this menu over the last 4 years, it's like, oh, shoot.
Go for it.
Just money.
That's it.
10 grand.
No.
We'll just have Arthur print some more money.
Yeah, that's it.
No,
that's right.
I don't file those kinds of taxes. Yeah.
So what do you expect that you'll have to pay for the
Well, I think
it depends on what this year. I mean, the last 2 years have been very high.
Yeah, it has been.
But
so I would honestly expect somewhere between $1,500 and $2,000
for the pig.
For the pig.
And then we would split that three ways.
Yes. I'm shooting for 900.
Okay.
Yeah,
good.
But that's
good
not
job.
Likely to happen, you know. I usually bid on you know, I'm one of those shills that somebody's got to bid against these other people. And I start.
So we need to authorize you to bid up to a certain amount.
Well, I don't want to be responsible. Yes, I should be. I know what it is. But they're heavier than they used to be, too.
Yeah.
When I was in 4-H, the bottom was 200 pounds. Now it's 230. And I don't know what the top is, but these hogs are intense.
Yeah,
they're little tanks.
Yeah.
Well, I remember we used to raise hogs, and we didn't want our market hogs to go over 235, 240.
235 was the package. That's what the perfect hog looked like.
260, 270.
Uh-huh. That was 10 years ago. Now they want them. These Americans, just bigger is better. And actually, if you look at the efficiencies of the pig, there's a bell curve of you know, inputs where you're getting your maximum growth per day and all that stuff. And it's moved. You know, it's not at 230. It doesn't peak anymore. It's right around the 260 range.
260.
It's probably a lot of that. So the lightest, the least expensive. No, somebody's got to buy that animal. So.
Yeah, that's right. That kid braids his pug too.
Absolutely, just like everybody else.
Buy the pinafore.
Pinafore. They pin them. They used to pin them when they had 300 hogs, and they do two or three hogs at a time. You never wanted those. Those are actually the ones that get the not blue ribbon, so something else. I never had to pin. Thank goodness. So.
If the family, there are county employees who have children in the fair, that would be.
I don't want to do preferential treatment. I don't look at who owns it.
No. I'm not saying who owns it. I didn't say who owned it. Did I? No. But you'd be wise.
Oh my God. Well, if I'm going to employ that, I'm buying Dwayne Stark's son's pig. And I
probably
Representative Stark has a son. He came around. They know a lot of people, so I'm not
sure.
No, that one will sell.
That one will be just fine.
So no, there's always that one that is.
I like the kid that doesn't have, you know, the connections and stuff. But, I feel good about that one.
Yeah.
So. All right.
So, you can front it on your credit card, and we can reimburse you.
I can.
Do you want a signature in blood that this guy will hear?
Is
that our scofflaw here?
He sold it to me. He compounds daily.
Oh, Lord. All
right.
You got a property reserve.
So, what kind of hogs do most of the kids have out there? Crossbreeds, or are there a certain breed that's kind of favored now, or what?
I'd say blue butts are probably still pretty prevalent.
Which one?
The Yorkshire, Yorkshire ham cross.
Mm-hmm.
I always had good luck with Duroc's. I thought those were.
They're not that prevalent now.
Not anymore.
That's what we raised was a cross. We had Duroc boar, and then we always had Landrace or.
Interesting.
We had a few hamps. I didn't like hamps. They were mean.
13 ribs. They have an additional rib.
Uh-huh.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I judged livestock in college a little bit and stuff. I'm not just some preppy kid. I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, we like the long, thin sows.
Yeah.
But we like the Duroc boar because they were docile.
They are pretty chill.
I could go in and take a hold of his ear and say, go that way, and he'd go. You know, I mean, he was gentle.
I
nearly killed a ham, though, because they were so mean. One attacked me one day, and I took the claw hammer, and I whacked that thing in the side of the head and knocked it down. It weighed 400 pounds. It came after me. I haven't seen their teeth.
They're good mothers, though. Those hams.
That was a mean sucker.
I had a Duroc gilt. She did really well. Her name was Daisy. She was really cute.
Oh,
Daisy.
Yeah, remember that.
And she went to the butcher. Daisy.
We might have bought her. We bought a couple. The family, Oxbow Ranch, bought a couple. So, but this one will be on behalf of the Board of Commissioners. I'll take our cards and you know, you hand them in and the stuff. And they'll announce them. With all three of us, so I'll make sure that Demick, J.D. Demick, is one of the auctioneers. The old guy, retired colonel, they called him colonel's auctioneers. I can't remember what his name was, but he was great. He auctioned my whole 9 years. We found my name on the 48, or the 96. I don't know if I did it in 97. It seemed like I did, but that was the year I graduated.
You've got your marching orders for the auction. Okay. And any other items?
Nope.
Just for the record, I just want to say that we are organizing. I had a visit from Elizabeth Esterbooks, who is the Women's Veterans Coordinator from the State Veterans Office. And they just started this. The last legislature passed it. And so we are doing, if not the first, one of the first two. I know there's another county thinking about it, but they have to be regional conferences. So we're putting on a regional women's veterans conference here October 27th. And I'm going about securing sponsors right now, and AllCare is going to be one of our sponsors. And I'm not asking for a lot of money from any of them because the state said they had a little bit of money to put in too, not a lot either. But it shouldn't cost as much. The food's being donated. Fairgrounds is where it's going to be held.
Great.
She's been very generous in the facility. I'm working with Lisa, and we have a conference call today at 12:30 to finalize a lot of our plans for it, so it's moving right along.
Are you coordinating with the AOCs, the veteran staff, on that at all? They might be really helpful in doing the next one. You know, you guys sound like you have it well underway, but for the next region, they should have this. You know, AOC has 8 regions. We're region 6 here, and David represents the chair. But it might make sense to kind of, you know, have it replicable. Like, this is what you do, and this is what you write, and these are the players, and then they just go do it.
Cause yeah, since we're the first one, well, there's another county doing it, and so they've sent us their list of topics. But, of course, they're a metropolitan. It's Multnomah County, so they're a metropolitan area. So their issues may be a little different than what
sure.
we have. But very similar, and we have to do it regionally, so it's Curry, Josephine, Douglas, Jackson, Klamath, maybe Coos.
Coos would be good. That's Region 6 minus Klamath Falls is not in it, but if they kind of we kind of include them more because
right.
yeah.
Okay. Anyway, just so you know, we're doing
know
that, and I'm trying to get.
Guy.
Yeah.
At AOC's Veterans Service.
Who is it?
I can't remember his name. He was at the Coastal Summit. We talked a little bit, and I think I mentioned that to him. He sounded really interested.
It would certainly be worthwhile
just
being there with us.
Well, when we talk today, we're going to talk about what we want on the flyer. So the state, she said, well, the state, maybe we'll be able to do it. But she said the other day, she said, we're so understaffed right now, we won't be able to do it. So we'll have to do the flyer.
You'd be a good contact to just know some other things.
Yeah.
And they can provide some of the supporting work, too, that we'll probably do.
Right. And I think Larry mentioned it when he was here the other day at the airport about the chamber meeting that was held there on Wednesday, on August 10th. And I did ask him to do that. You know, the county's a member of the chamber.
Oh, yeah.
And they've been putting the profiles, you know, in the newsletter, which has been a fabulous job. But I said, you know, I think there's a lot of people that are in the business community here that don't really know about or understand the role of the airport. So he held one of those meetings out there, and they had a really turn. They usually have like 40, 50 people turn out. It's over 70 turnout at the airport. So it was very interesting, a good turnout. And he had it all outside, beautiful day, big plane parked out there. And there were so many people that really didn't know about the airport that I think that's going to be a really good jump-off thing for now the airport day is coming up.
You know, we could replicate in parks or the Fairgrounds has done it at least.
Fairgrounds
once,
has done
twice.
It. Yeah, I remember they did it once.
I've been there to that one. And then, yeah.
Yeah, and some of these things are, we take for granted.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You know, that, oh, yeah, everybody.
Well,
no.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody
right.
does.
Right.
So. In the spring, maybe.
Yeah, at the park, how about parks? And,
mud bowl.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted you to know that doing these kinds of promotional things, and of course what the Perks is doing too, there's, you know, doing self-promotion is a good thing. And I think that served us well for him to have that out there. I know it took a little bit out of his budget to do it because you have to provide the breakfast stuff and all that. So, but I think it's well worth it if they had, you know, 20, 30 extra people turn out because they were interested. And now they understand the role of the airport. So that's probably the best liaison update I can give you at the moment. And
something on AOC public lands, the subcommittee that we elected not to contribute to.
Yes, I got the email on that.
Yeah,
he called me, actually.
Yeah, I talked to him about the economics on it. And I told Gil and Mark Davidson, I said, I'm going to need a really, you know, clearly defined, not just the budget. I need a strategy that merits us being included in this and contributing. It's $2,600. It's not chunk change, but, you know, and so we're going to sit down. Their next meeting's on September 12th.
Okay.
I'm going to go to Salem. And so I don't want I can't speak and say yes, we may consider it, because the board has made a decision not to.
Yeah, we made the decision not to.
But if you are inclined to say, go forth, look into this deeper, come back with the recommendation of doing one way or the other.
You know, what he said to me on the phone was, well, you know, I got a $20,000 hole in my budget, you know, and there's four or five counties that didn't pay up this year, and, you know, so we got, you know, we do some legislative stuff. He still didn't give me a chance.
I was going to say, if that is the argument, then that's a waste of breath.
Then the answer is still no. That's
sure.
Why we said no.
Right.
First
so time. When you meet with them, if they come up with a compelling reason that we're working on this piece of legislation and this piece of legislation, and what he said is, well, you know, you get pills and we lobby on pills. And I'm going, yeah, we get pills and you lobby on pills, but then so do
a few others. So
right, so does NACO.
County says that, and that's
and we were, or at least I was in touch with our congressman on those whole thing, too. So, you know, we need something compelling. If they can come up with some good reason for us to do that, then I can change my mind.
Mine is working on a pill pre-authorization made permanent, a permanent solution, mm-hmm. where we're not having to lobby on this mm-hmm. every time. Mm-hmm. And I think because TILF has been well-funded, it's actually one of those things that I think you can get done, mm-hmm. but that needs to be the strategy. Not that we're just going to keep paying somebody to keep lobbying on this forever. You know, let's have an end game in mind, and that's what I want to see.
Right. Yeah. So he didn't give me a compelling reason on the phone. So if you're going to meet with them and they can come up, for instance, if he said has hands to your list and say, we're going to lobby to make pill permanent, and we're going to lobby to do this, you know. Then
my answer can change. Mm-hmm. I did want to ask and see if there was an ability to change the decision, because I obviously can't do that on my own. If you
I'm willing to if they come up with a plan.
Then I don't have to have that conversation.
Yeah, my concern
is, you guys.
What is the direct impact, either way,
right.
on those two
times? I'll have that answer.
Okay. All right. Thanks for remembering that. I forgot about that one. Okay. All right. We are adjourned. 10:32.